Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, sports fans. It is Sunday night, August 18th, 2013, and we are inching ever so closely to the start of the NFL season. Good evening out there. How are you? This is Ryan Stern coming to you. This is Beyond the Bench, brought to you by Back Sports Page. I can check us out at www.backsportspage.com. Follow us on Twitter at Back Sports Page. You can always follow me at rstern33bsp or follow the show's Twitter account at Beyond the Bench. How's everyone doing tonight? We are about to complete the second full week of NFL preseason action. It's been a whole preseason that's been really headlined by injuries. And we're going to get into some of the big injuries that have happened very recently. Tonight we are going to preview the NFC North and the AFC South. We're going to look into the 12-team PPR IDP mock draft that I was lucky enough to participate in, that was broadcasted on Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio this morning. And we are going to start off with a little bit of Major League Baseball, and particularly the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers have been on an all-time run. It's been, I think, since 1939 did a team go 42-8. At least 42-8 in a 50-game span. They went from being, I think they were 13 or 11, it was either 11 or 13 games, I have to check, out at the time of their streak. So, I want to say it's 13. And currently, they are now 7.5 ahead of the Arizona Diamondbacks. So you're talking about a 20-game turnaround in the standings in a matter of 50 games, which is absolutely unheard of. I said at the All-Star break that the Dodgers were my pick to still come out and win the NL West, even though they were behind at the time. I also said that I thought Pittsburgh was going to win the Central. They are now a game ahead of St. Louis, 2.5 ahead of Cincinnati, in what is clearly the best top-heavy division in the entire major leagues. I said that Washington, they were close, but I just didn't see them having the fire that they had last year, and I thought Atlanta was going to hold everyone off. Well, they're not going to hold everyone off. They are absolutely rolling away with the division. They have by far the biggest lead of any first place team in Major League Baseball. The Dodgers are second. The Dodgers have a 7.5 game lead over Arizona, and the Atlanta Braves have a 15.5 game lead over the Washington Nationals. I did say that I thought Texas would take over Oakland. Oakland at the time was in first place. I thought Texas was going to come back, win the division. They now have a one-game lead, which is nothing. We still have just under 40 games left to play. I did say I thought that Detroit, even though they had been struggling at the time, I thought they were by far the class of the AL Central, and they have a 6.5 game lead over Cleveland. And then I also said that Boston, I thought was going to fall back a little bit into the pack. They haven't really done that as of yet. I thought Tampa was going to win the AL East. And like I said, there's still 40 games left for Tampa, 37 left for Boston. And it's only a 1.5 game lead, but they're even in the loss column. So Tampa is primed to still make a run at the AL East crown. I still do believe that the two wild card teams in the American League will come out of the East. I think Baltimore will jump ahead of Oakland. Oakland has a 1.5 lead on the Baltimore Orioles. I don't think that that's going to stand up. The only thing that may stay in Baltimore's way will be the fact that they have to play a lot of division games in September, and the American League East is top to bottom the best division in all of baseball. Over the past couple weeks, we've had the return of Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez was suspended 211 games by Major League Baseball. And the fact that he's able to appeal, and they're now saying that the appeal process isn't going to come to an end until November, and he's allowed to play the rest of the season, is an absolute travesty. If someone is suspended, an appeal process. Now, I know this is such a special circumstance because of how long it is and with how prominent a player it deals with, but you got to get something done within a couple weeks. You can't let someone who is so tainting the game that you have to suspend him for almost 1.5 years to allow him to then play. You just can't do that. So if you're a Major League Baseball player, you have to love what the Players Association is doing, trying to stick up for their players. But we all know Alex Rodriguez is guilty. It's not even debatable. It's almost sickening now every time he answers a question, and he has to answer questions every day because there's a new report coming out every day about something that's linking him to something negative. The latest report was that from 60 Minutes is that he leaked the names of Ryan Braun and Francisco Cervelli, his own teammate, in the Biogenesis scandal. Now, if this report is true, now, again, Rodriguez is denying it, but if this report is true and Alex Rodriguez did, or his people did, leak the names, they are admitting guilt. That's all they are doing. They are 100% admitting guilt because they're only looking for a way to reduce the number of games that Alex Rodriguez suspended. They want him off the 211. They're trying to work out a plea bargain, which is we know what Ryan Braun did. Braun took the hit, and even though this was now his second failed test after what happened with the mishandling of his first failed test, and now he's going to be coming out and admitting guilt during his MVP season of 2011. But he got a 100-game suspension reduced to 65 because he took the hit for being the first one to get suspended and coming out and not having it be MLB that's releasing it. So when we talk about the Kansas City Royals, they've been surging lately. They've been one of the hotter teams in the American League. And they have one of their best. Yeah, one of their best players who is now suspended for 105 games in Miguel Tejada. He has failed two drug tests for the use of Adderall. Apparently, he had some sort of permit allowing him, because of a medical condition, to allow him to be able to use Adderall at the time of playing. That permit expired, and he never got it renewed. And now he is suspended for 105 games. Now, it's something that I'm a little interested in. Why is this 105? Where's the extra 5 games from? He failed 2 tests. That's 100 games. So that part is a little intriguing. So when we look at the playoffs and how I feel that they're going to lay out, I think Tampa Bay is the best team when you look at offense, defense, pitching. I think Tampa Bay is primed to be the team to be in the American League. Detroit, if Justin Verlander can return to Justin Verlander form, which has been taken over by Max Scherzer, who is now 18-1, first time since Roger Clemens that someone has started 18-1. But if Justin Verlander can return back to his normal form, then Detroit may be the team to beat. I think Tampa Bay right now, with the way that their rotation is just dominating most games that they play, is going to be the team that comes out of the American League. Now, the National League, you have two teams that are running away with their divisions, the Dodgers and the Braves. The Braves, I think, are more of a product of the division that they play in. They get to play in a division where every other team is under 500. It is the only division in baseball where there is one team that's over 500. So the Braves have been lucky enough to feast off of the horrible play that the rest of the National League East has given them. And I think that's a reason why Atlanta may not be one of the top teams when it comes to the playoffs. I think you're looking at the Dodgers and you're looking at the Pirates. I was surprised that the Pirates did not really add a big bat at the trading deadline. I thought that that was key for them to do. They did not do that. But they get a little bit of redemption in the fact that they have by far the best bullpen in the entire league. So their pitching makes up for their lack of a second real thumper outside of Pedro Alvarez. And Alvarez had cooled off a little bit after the All-Star break this past week. He's refound his swing. He's now at, I believe, 30 home runs and is really carrying the team along with Andrew McCutchen offensively. So but the Dodgers still remain the team to beat, even though they have they have the fewest. They are actually tied with the Pirates for having the fewest amount of wins by a division leading team. Both of them are 72-51. But the Dodgers, and when you go into a series where you can pitch Clayton Kershaw in at least two of the games, you're set. Clayton Kershaw is having probably the best, and the Dodgers, especially throughout the 90s, the 80s and 90s, were flooded with amazing seasons turned in by pitchers. Clayton Kershaw is turning in an all-time season. He is, it's the lowest ERA that a Dodger pitcher has had this late in the season since Sandy Koufax in 66. And the 66 season that Koufax put through is one of the more monumental seasons that has ever been put forth, one of the most dominant seasons that you'll ever see by a pitcher. And that with the depth that they have behind him, with Granke, with Nolasco, with Rue, they're set to win any type of series, whether it be a short series or a long series. The Dodgers, if I had to make a bet right now, the Dodgers are winning the World Series. I think that they are that stacked. They were my pick from the beginning of the season, and I never backed down from them. I had always believed that the Dodgers would find a way to at least win the division. And as we're seeing right now, even though they lost to the Phillies in the ninth today, they are now 42-9 in their last 51 games. So if you're asking me right now, Sunday, August 18th, 2013, we are going to see a Los Angeles Dodgers and Tampa Bay Rays World Series. And we have a caller on the line. Caller, what is your name? How are you today?
I'm doing fine. This is Marty. How are you?
All right. What would you like to talk about today?
What do you think the odds are of a Pittsburgh Dodgers NLCS? And I know you just said the Dodgers are going to win, but why don't you think Pittsburgh has a shot?
Well, I do think that the Pirates are the second best team in the National League right now. I said that they have the with the best bullpen. They have a very solid lineup throughout, and I really think that they're a better team going into the playoffs than than the Atlanta Braves say. I do think that they are also the way that the Braves are a product of their division. They are a product of their own. They have to play much better competition, and yet they're still atop the NL Central. And with that, we are going to segue into a little bit of NFL football. So today we are going to preview the NFC North and the AFC South. The NFC North, we're going to start off with the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay Packers are obviously the team that everyone is picking to win the division. They are stacked offensively. They did lose Greg Jennings, but they still have three top-notch wide receivers, and Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and James Jones. James Jones is coming off a 14-touchdown season. Jordy Nelson is coming off an injury-plagued season, but his 2011 season, if he can get anywhere close to that level of play, is going to make something special, especially when you add in someone with the likes of Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb is being projected wherever you go, wherever you look, to have a 100-catch season. All the reports are that him and Aaron Rodgers are meshing very well in camp. He's the perfect type of receiver for Rodgers. He's quick, he's a good route runner, and he's got good hands. So the three of them were able to lead the Green Bay Packers passing attack, which has been good enough most years. Their biggest issue has been their run game. Ever since they had the one big year from Ryan Grant, they have not been able to find any consistency out of their running backs over the past couple years. They spent two second-round picks on top-grade, top-level running backs in Eddie Lacy and Jonathan Franklin. Eddie Lacy out of Alabama, Jonathan Franklin out of UCLA. Jonathan Franklin seems to be the better fit for the Packers' offense, the style that they run. But Eddie Lacy has by far been the better of the two running backs in camp, and especially the game against the Rams the other night. Eddie Lacy looks like a man who wants to take that job and run with it. The Packers run a very high octane, a lot of no-huddle offense, and running backs tend to stay on the field for entire drives. So if Eddie Lacy can show that he can handle staying on the field, then he's going to be a very, very key contributor to the Packers' offense. The one kink is the Packer defense. The Packer defense has not been good over the past couple of years, and they did not get any better. They lost Charles Woodson. Their defense just isn't among one of the top defenses in the league the way that they were a couple years ago, especially the year that they won the Super Bowl. The Packers have been trying to rely on Clay Matthews. And Clay Matthews, although he is one of the elite defenders in the entire league, needs help. Because all an offensive line has to do is key on him, because they aren't getting any pass rush from anywhere else. They aren't getting any playmaking ability from anywhere else. And if the Packers are going to go far in the playoffs, they're going to need someone on that defense to really step up and help out Clay Matthews. I do think that they will win the division because their offense is that good. The only way that I see them not making the playoffs is if the loss of Brian Bulaga as their left tackle hurts them more than we think it will. And there is a chance at that. I will say that the Packers go 11-5 and win the division. Next team, the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears lost the face of their franchise in Brian Urlacher to retirement. So now we're looking at a big hole in the middle of their defense. It's going to be important that someone steps into that role, because the middle linebacker in the cover two, which is what the Chicago Bears run predominantly, is the athletic ability of the middle linebacker. How many times did we see Brian Urlacher drop back 15, 20 yards into coverage in the middle of the field and pick off a quarterback? That void is going to be very key for the Chicago Bears to fill. The Bears did improve their offensive line. They acquired Jermaine Bushrod from the Saints. He's their new left tackle. If Jay Cutler can stay upright, he's going to have a big season. Brandon Marshall, if he can stay healthy, is going to have a big season, just like he did last year. One of the big things that the Chicago Bears have lacked over the past couple of years is their second wide receiver, their wide receiver on the weak side. Alshon Jeffrey is having a great camp so far and is primed to step into that role full time. Matt Forte, I think you're going to see a lot of screens, a lot of catches in the flat. I think, and Mark Trestman is going to really change the philosophy of that offense. I think the Bears are a good team. I don't think they are an elite team. They will challenge for a playoff spot. I can see them being either a 9-7 or a 10-6 team. I can see them. We're going to say they'll go 10-6, and it'll all come down to tiebreakers to see if they are able to get one of the wild card spots. The next team in the NFC North is the Minnesota Vikings. There's only one thing to talk about with the Vikings, and that's Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson was a 2,000-yard rusher last year when teams were putting 8 or 9 in the box consistently. Can he do it again? There's only been one running back who has rushed for 2,000 yards and then the next season rushed for 1,500 yards. And that was Barry Sanders. We all know that Barry Sanders is one of the elite NFL players of all time. So, Adrian Peterson, who is, again, the MVP, the reigning MVP, is going to have to do, I believe, even more. And I think he's going to end up have to be more involved in the passing game. The Vikings did lose their top passing target in Percy Harvin when he was traded to the Seattle Seahawks before he got injured. And they added Greg Jennings, who is at the end of his career, and they drafted Cordarrelle Patterson. Cordarrelle Patterson has not been impressive in camp so far, and with the loss of Harvin, they needed someone to be that big, fast target, and that's what Cordarrelle Patterson was supposed to have been. I don't think he's going to do it this year. I do not think that the quarterback situation in Minnesota with Christian Ponder is very safe. I don't think Christian Ponder even finishes the season as the starting quarterback. I think eventually you will see Matt Cassel, and that's not even saying something great because we all know what Matt Cassel is. He's a real good number two quarterback, and that's what he's been his entire career. His only taste of success was when Tom Brady went down and he was put into the situation of a lifetime. He had an all-time team surrounding him. That's why he went 11-5 with the Patriots that year. But there's also a reason why Matt Cassel did not start a game for 7 years. Matt Cassel had what was the backup to Carson Palmer at USC. And then he was the backup to Tom Brady in New England. 7 years. I know that Carson Palmer at USC was one of the all-time great careers in college that a college quarterback has had. And Tom Brady is one of the elite quarterbacks that the NFL has ever had. So he has not been in situations that have really forced him to get any playing time. But that also has taken away from any playing experience that he should have gotten or that he now lacks from other quarterbacks who have been playing. So I do think that this will be a rough year for the Minnesota Vikings. I don't see the Vikings winning more than 5 games. I will give them a 5-11 record, and they will take a huge step backwards from what they did last year. Rounding out the NFC North will be the Detroit Lions. This will be a very tough year for the Lions. I really think that their offensive line woes are going to haunt them. If you have Matt Stafford as a fantasy option, you will be in luck because Matt Stafford will throw the ball at least 700 times again this year. He may not complete 50% of them, but he does have Calvin Johnson, the best receiver in all the game. And he does now have Reggie Bush out of the backfield, and if you are in a PPR, we'll get into the PPR draft that I was a part of this morning. Reggie Bush is going to be solid gold. I think you're going to see Reggie Bush be highly involved in the passing attack. He may have more receiving yards this year than he has rushing yards. That's all going to be a product of how poor the Detroit Lions offensive line is. I see the Lions with a 4-12 record and them finishing out of the playoffs and with a top 10 pick in the NFL draft next year again. Swinging over to the AFC South. The AFC South has two of the more intriguing teams in all of football, in my opinion. We'll start off with the Houston Texans. The Houston Texans are coming off of their second division title in a row. And they were able to do it without the likes of Brian Cushing throughout two-thirds of the season last year after he was lost to an ACL injury. Brian Cushing is the fuel and the heart of that defense. There is nobody on the defense who has a higher motor, who has a higher passion for the defensive side of the ball than Brian Cushing. If Cushing stays healthy and the components that surround him play the way that they did last year, I think this will be a great year for the Texans because they have now, especially when you look at the offensive side of the ball, them, like the Chicago Bears, have been lacking in that second wide receiver spot. They draft DeAndre Hopkins out of Clemson, and he is already making a great connection with Matt Schaub. He is looking explosive. He is doing everything that they have been looking for opposite of Andre Johnson for the past couple of years. He's so far looked to be everything that they thought Kevin Walter was going to be. So if we see the blooming of DeAndre Hopkins and if Arian Foster can stay healthy, so you're looking at three big ifs for the Texans. We're looking at Cushing, we're looking at Hopkins, we're looking at Foster. If those three can stay healthy and be as productive as we are assuming that they will be, this will be a very good year for the Texans, considering it is a very down year for the elite teams of the AFC. I don't think that the Patriots are as good as they used to be. The Steelers aren't as good as they used to be. The Ravens aren't as good as they used to be. So you're really looking at a two-team race, in my opinion, between the Texans and the Broncos. The other team that really intrigues me for the AFC South is the Indianapolis Colts. I love what the Colts have done with bringing in some veteran presence to lead their excitement that is their youth. Bringing in Ahmad Bradshaw, who, when healthy, is one of the more productive running backs that you will see in the game. And Ahmad Bradshaw is going to miss three or four games. That's what Ahmad Bradshaw always does. But Ahmad Bradshaw is also going to help in the development of Vic Ballard, someone like that. So now you're looking at a two running back situation in Indy. And Vic Ballard was quietly one of the better running backs in the second half of the year last year in all of football. So if Ahmad Bradshaw just gives off, especially what Bradshaw does in the blocking game, Bradshaw, for someone of his size, which isn't big, is an elite. And I know that I've been throwing that word around with some big names, but Ahmad Bradshaw is an elite blocker out of the backfield. He knows how to read blitzes. He knows how to chip and then fall into the flat and pick up a good 6 or 7 yards when you need 4 or 5. That's just what Ahmad Bradshaw always does. So I love that pickup. Reggie Wayne, I was so down on last year. I thought that he was going to really show his age and that he was on the other half of his career. And Reggie Wayne just caught a 28-yard touchdown pass from Andrew Luck, who I think, and everyone, I know I've said this in the past, we had a caller a couple weeks ago wanted to talk some Indianapolis Colts football. If you're looking at the four big quarterbacks that were in their first year of playing last year, so we're looking at Luck, Griffin, Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick. Of those four, there's one that I would want to build my team around, and it's not even close, and that's Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck is going to be something special. He may already be something special. This kid knows how to read defenses. He knows when to throw the ball away. He knows when to tuck it in and run for 5 or 6 yards. And he just has that je ne sais quoi that a good quarterback really needs. I do think they take a slight step backwards because of the loss of Dwight Freeney. I think that is going to be a key loss. And I don't know if Robert Mathis is going to be able to be the player that he used to be without Freeney on the other side. So I think their defense will take a step back from what it did last year. And I think the Colts end up with a record of 9-7 and fall just out of the playoffs. But this is a team that is only going to be one of the better AFC teams over the next couple years, and that's because of their quarterback. Next in the AFC South is the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee Titans needed to rebuild their offensive line in the worst way. Chris Johnson went from being a 2,000-yard running back to a guy who, unless he broke off a big play, would average 2 yards a carry. There were too many times that Chris Johnson got tackled behind the line of scrimmage last year. And it just wasn't the same Chris Johnson that we were used to. They addressed their needs. They signed Andy Levitre from Buffalo, and they drafted Chance Warmack out of Alabama. And they also picked up Sean Green, who Sean Green was never in the top half of all running backs, but he was always near the top of the second half. He did not have a lot to work with in the Jets offense the past couple of years because of their lack of weapons. So I think the addition of Sean Green may sort of give Chris Johnson that motivational boost because they have someone who can fill in and be productive behind him. I do think Chris Johnson has a bounce back year. I don't think you see anything like what we saw in 2009, but I do think that we may see a 12 to 1400 yard campaign this year for Chris Johnson. That said, I think the Titans finish 7-9. Jake Locker still has a lot of proving to do. There's a lot of rumblings that the Titans aren't sold on Locker being the quarterback of their future. And that if this season does not go well for Locker, they will be looking to draft a quarterback in the first round next year. I do think he'll be better than he was last year. I don't think he's going to be great. 7-9 will be my prediction for the Titans. And rounding out the AFC South will be the Jacksonville Jaguars. There's not much to say. The only bit of interest with the Jaguars will be whether or not Maurice Jones-Drew comes back to the status that he was before he got hurt with his Lisfranc injury last year. He finally saw his first action last night against the Jets. He touched the ball four times, had 29 yards, so 7 yards a touch is about average for what you see from Maurice Jones-Drew, because of his ability to catch the ball. And he did have the one big play. He had a 20-yard reception where he's able to find the open space. Blaine Gabbert is Blaine Gabbert. He's nothing special. And the only reason why Blaine Gabbert is going to still be the starting quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars is because Chad Henne just has done absolutely nothing. He's looked absolutely dreadful, and in a competition where if Henne had played well, he could beat out Blaine Gabbert to be the starting quarterback. But regular old Blaine Gabbert is still better than what Chad Henne has been, and it's a shame. I do think we're looking at a 2-3 win team. They're going to be at the top of the draft again. Luke Jokel is definitely going to help out, but it's not going to be enough, not yet. So, rounding out my predictions for the two divisions, I think the Packers go 11-5, win the NFC North, followed by the Bears at 10-6. The Vikings at 5-11, the Lions at 4-12, over in the AFC South. I like the Texans to go 12-4, win the division. I'd like the Colts to go 9-7,
finished just out of the playoffs. 7-9 for the Tennessee Titans, and we'll give the Jaguars 3 wins. We'll have them go 3-13 this year. We have a couple minutes left in the show today. If you would like to join, 760-283-0846. Once again, 760-283-0846. I was able to participate in a mock draft this morning for the Roto Experts. Mike Blewett, who may be joining us next week, and Tony Sincotta were the two hosts of the draft. It was a PPR, or point per reception, and IDP, which is individual defensive player. So you don't play team defense. You play individual players, and you had to take two defensive linemen, two linebackers, and two defensive backs. I had the first overall pick, so obviously I go with the MVP and Adrian Peterson. Obviously, I'm not expecting Adrian Peterson to have the 2,000 yards that he had last year, even though he's saying that he can go for 2,500. I'm not expecting that. But I do believe that Adrian Peterson will still be the most consistent player, consistent running back of anyone in the league. I do think he can get to that 1,500-yard mark. And if you can guarantee 1,500 yards, you're going to be a first-round draft pick. So, Adrian Peterson, I took number one overall. Second round, I took Roddy White. The Falcons are going to score a lot of points this year. Now, they will have three main targets that are going to score the bulk of their touchdowns between Steven Jackson, Roddy White, and Julio Jones. Roddy White, doesn't matter what anyone says, is still Matt Ryan's number one target. So I love getting Roddy White in a PPR because I do think that he is the most consistent back. You will see Julio Jones have some of those games where he goes off and has 10 catches for 150 yards and two touchdowns. But Roddy White will almost always give you 7 catches for 90 yards. And he'll give you 10 touchdowns a year. He is as consistent a wide receiver as there is. In the third round, I was able to take Darren Sproles. Darren Sproles is really only a viable option this high in the draft if your league is a PPR. Darren Sproles is a PPR monster. The Saints throw the ball almost as much as anyone else. Maybe only the Lions throw the ball more. And Darren Sproles will catch 5 to 7 balls a game. He'll get you 50 to 80 receiving yards, and he'll give you 20 to 30 rushing yards a game. So in a PPR, if he gets you 5 for 60 and 30 rushing yards, you're looking at a 14-point game. So, and he is that consistent where he will do that week in and week out. Rounding out my roster, I have Eli Manning. I was able to get Eli in the 9th round. Eli is probably the last ranked quarterback that I have as number one QB worthy. And if you can still get your number one quarterback in the 9th round, you're going to be better off than most other players at other positions. My other receivers, I have Pierre Garçon, who is the prime target in Washington. I have James Jones, who landed 14 touchdowns last year. At tight end, I have Brandon Myers. Brandon Myers, who I think he was able to catch 75 balls in Oakland last year. Eli Manning loves to go to his tight ends. So I love what Brandon Myers is going to be able to do this year for the Giants. In my flex, I have DeMarco Murray. So I have DeMarco Murray as my third running back. I think if you can afford to take DeMarco, the only way I think you can afford to take DeMarco Murray is if you have two viable options ahead of him at running back. DeMarco Murray is injury prone. He's missed 9 games in the last 2 years. But when he's been on the field, he's been productive. And if you can get someone of that productivity to be your flex play, I believe it's an absolute win for you. So I love going running back heavy early. On my bench, I also have Emmanuel Sanders out of Pittsburgh, Fred Davis out of the tight end out of Washington, Vic Ballard, the running back out of Indy, and Andy Dalton, the quarterback for the Cincy Bengals. Now, my defensive players, I was able to grab James Laurinaitis, who was the second leading tackler in the entire league last year. I love having him in a league that rewards tackles, because he is as consistent as they come when it comes to being there, getting the tackles. I also have Levante David, who led the league in tackles. So I really made sure that I was able to find two players who are going to be three down linebackers so that they are able to have the most amount of attempts at a tackle. Now, I was thinking about going J.J. Watt in the 5th round. I decided to go with Pierre Garçon, hoping that Watt would fall to me at the end of the 6th round. That didn't happen. I did take Cameron Wake and Muhammad Wilkerson. My defensive backs, I have LaRon Landry and Ed Reed. Ed Reed, that's a flyer, hoping that he is reborn in Houston, and it was in the 17th round, so it's not like I really reached for. So next week, we are going to preview the NFC West and the AFC East. We will also have on Mike Blewett of the Roto Experts, who was the host of the draft, one of the two hosts of the draft that I participated in this morning. We'll also look to September, when it's the final stretch for baseball, and we'll be 1 week closer to the start of the NFL regular season. This is Ryan Stern. You can find me on Twitter at rstern33bsp, or follow the show at Beyond the Bench. I want to thank everyone over at Back Sports Page for producing the show today. And thank you for listening. And I will see you next week. Have a good one. Oh, and next week, we will be also joined by special guest Ricky Edwards, up-and-coming boxer out of Patterson, Jersey. So that'll be I'll be super psyched for that one. So until then, have a good week, everyone.